Welcome everyone to X Factor Files. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
I don't have a cold this time when we're recording.
Hooray.
Although I feel it's lingering a little. I feel everything is lingering this winter.
This winter has been bad in a lot of ways. One of the people at work was saying that they've had everything except norovirus in their household. They've had COVID. They've had the flu. They've had para-influenza, which I didn't know was a thing. They've had RSV.
Oh.
So really the only thing they're missing is norovirus, but I don't want that for him.
No, not at all.
Because when I had it, I was incapacitated for a few days.
Yeah.
And like couldn't sleep, couldn't do stuff, had to curl up on the floor in between bites of food.
Yeah. And it's snowing out today. We're recording this on Valentine's Day. I guess it's our Valentine to all of our listeners.
Hello.
But it's coming late, so sorry.
Yeah. You had to drive through it. I got home before it started, but we're supposed to get 1 to 3 today.
Yeah.
Which isn't bad. And I think we get another 1 to 3 tonight.
Ugh.
So I'll probably shovel.
Yeah.
Tonight and then again in the morning.
It depends on how many times the plow goes by, I guess.
Well, the side street will they come so much later because it is a side street.
Yeah.
But we have curb cutouts and we're not those people that don't shovel the curb cutouts because that's a dick thing to do. Be kind to the folks that need them.
Yes.
So also if you have a fire hydrant, you should shovel around that.
True. I think that's like a law.
Oh yeah. The city I work in has a adopt a hydrant so people can do it themselves and they even get to name it.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't know if there's any clever ones out there, but I'm sure there are.
Yeah.
And we have Nick and Nora with us.
Yes, they are grazing some hay in the late afternoon.
So if you hear some crinkles, if you hear some romp, 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 like rabbit eating the card table or coffee table, that might be a thing. So.
And
they were snuggled when they were napping.
Yeah, they were. They were very cute.
Nick's been a dick, though, recently.
Yeah, really aggressive. Yeah.
And charging.
Yeah. So. I think I roused them from their nap when I was in the pantry trying to discreetly unpackage some spicy queso Funyuns, and they heard the crinkles.
There's nothing appealing about spicy queso Funyuns.
They sort of taste like the pork rinds at Publican.
Yeah, I don't care for pork rinds either.
No. I think that's the only time you've ever had pork rinds.
Yes. I see them sometimes in the butcher shop at the snack section. Yeah. And it's just like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I do remember a soap opera person from like being sick in seventh grade. And it was an alternate personality. And she was just kept eating pork rinds.
Is this from Passions?
Is this from Days of Our Lives?
Oh, it sounds like a Passion storyline, honestly.
Oh, I forgot how bad Passions was until we watched some of it.
We need to pick it back up. Maybe tonight, Valentine's Day. What better day for Passions than Valentine's Day?
I feel like we have some better options than Passions.
I don't know. Like, it's we have pretty good. We have Haley Mills' sister in that show.
Of Disney film fame, such as The Parent Trap and Pollyanna.
Yes.
And I think a few other things.
Yeah, she was a go-to.
Haley Mills.
Yes, not her sister.
Yeah. But we have the remastered Thin Man movies.
Yes, we do.
And wrestling.
But what we have right now are issues 20 through 22.
Yeah.
Of Alpha Flight. So the last time we visited the team... One, it was our previous season, which doesn't matter because...
It's an arbitrary line in the sand.
It really is. And two, it was with the X-Men, as written by Claremont, and those two king-size issues took a whole lot to get through.
They did. And I think I had to take a nap in between.
You did.
And they happen around this time.
Yes, that's why we sequenced it that way.
Yeah, a little bit later, I think.
No, like there, really? There are deep discussions about where to put X-Men Alpha Flight.
And it's before 20?
It's before issue 20. It's weird. So
the dialogue, I feel like, is after.
I'm trying to remember if it's this one or a different crossover. It might be a different crossover.
Because we
there's a point in Alpha Flight where there's a story elsewhere, and it has to happen within like 6 hours of when the team gets back and when the mainline issue starts up. Like,
is it the Spider-Man thing with North Star and Aurora that these issues reference that?
You have,
and I don't think we've read it.
I've read it, of course, but well, you haven't. It's in your short box,
well,
which is where you had to pull these issues from so you could read them today.
It's true. My tablet has been unused for quite some time, so it was absolutely out of battery.
Yes, but luckily you have all of Volume 1.
I mean, it's sort of us too for the week, after this week, out of battery.
Yes. I'm trying to think. What is that? I think it's an annual.
With North Star and Spider-Man?
Spectacular Spider-Man? I could probably just scroll back somewhere in this document.
We'll come across it.
Yes.
Because there's multiple references to it in 20 and 21? No, 21, 22.
Issue 20 is called Golden Love Affairs. It's from March 1985.
I like the reference on the front. Gold and love affairs are difficult to hide, and it's very apropos.
Writer and artist John Byrne. We have Keith Williams on inks.
Yeah, we do, because this issue is autographed by him.
Yeah, we have coloring by Andy Yankus. Letterer is Rick Parker, and editor is Denny O'Neill. And I think it's impressive that of this creative team, we have met two of them in person.
Have we?
Yep, we met Rick Parker at C2E2.
Oh, with the other guy.
Yep,
with they shared a table.
Yep.
I only remember the other name because it ends with a ski.
Oh, and really, it's the only two people we could possibly meet from this because
Byrne
doesn't do cons, and Andy Yankus is dead.
What about Rick Parker?
The one I just told you we met.
Oh, that's true. Well, I just kept looking at his name because I kept thinking, where can I interject that it's a very superhero non-costumed name, like their regular persona. Like Rick
Parker. Like Peter Parker?
Yes, or Rick Jones.
Okay.
Or if you squish them together.
Editor is Denny O'Neill, who was Byrne's editor on this book. So we open up with Sasquatch ripping up trees by their roots in the Canadian Rockies and southeastern British Columbia in order to make way for a new sanitarium.
Which is just sort of rude.
He cleared all the space in 5 hours.
I know, but where are all the birds going to go? What about all the bugs?
Aurora flies in to remind him of their plans to have a night on the town, which is unlike us because I bought us frozen pizzas from Chicago to get shipped in dry ice so we don't have to battle.
I mean,
people for a date night on Valentine's Day.
You can't just say we're having frozen pizza for Valentine's Day. You have to say we're having a special pizza that you ordered in special for tonight.
It's Lou Malnati's from Chicago, the best deep dish in Chicago, everyone, and it's heart shaped.
One of them is.
Yes. The other one is just one of their delicious spinach pizzas.
Which we will devour.
In a brand new outfit that no longer matches her brother's, she flirts and kisses a workman, which only serves to make Sasquatch jealous.
Yeah. She descends from on high.
She's like, hey there.
In her glowy boots. She seems to be glowing, which I didn't think was possible without her North Star touching.
She has the light. This is such a fucked up story mechanic that will actually matter in like 80 issues again.
Because they did something to her and it's affecting her powers.
Correct. So like she has all of the light, which will come into play in another 30 issues. it's so dumb. And
like he won't have any, like it's a zero sum game between them. And
I can't say anything, but I'm going to say it's a story mechanic. It's a good pickup that you have that she's radiating light because it's actually a plot point later on.
Okay. They are swooning over her like, oh, she doesn't look like she's in her picture, but we're not complaining because now she has cleavage. And the woman there is like, oh no, your brother's not here. I wanted to meet him. And she's like, oh, so sad. Like another time you can maybe meet my brother. But that woman is also barking up the wrong tree.
She is. So Aurora flies off, leaving Sasquatch to observe her speed has reduced since he helped transform her powers.
Yeah, she calls him a stick in the mud because he
wants to finish his work.
Well, yes. And he's like, oh, I'm sure Aurora's just teasing you. Aren't you, Aurora? And she's like, fine, be a stick in the mud. I'll meet you at your place. And she flies off.
Sasquatch also takes a moment to observe that the rages he has become more prone to and wonders how they manifest, as his labor this day didn't do anything to trigger them. So it's not him becoming Sasquatch and using an incredible amount of power that is bringing on the rage.
Right. He would not have done this if it didn't serve his own little experiment.
Yeah. Then we go on over to
Heather, Puck, Elizabeth, Snowbird, and Shaman.
They're in Alberta at Heather's parents' house.
Which I don't remember how they got there, or do they just magically appear there?
They just
there?
Sort of magically appear there.
Okay, great.
Because her parents are out of town, so she's
for
like,
another 10 days.
We have a temporary place.
But it does serve a good purpose for Heather to have a withdrawn moment as she's going to the kitchen of like, I haven't spoken to my parents since we eloped. I'm just waiting for my mother to walk through the door with the big sign that says, I told you so.
I just want to take this point. Let's point to Alpha Flight -1, where they didn't fucking elope. -1 has so many continuity issues.
It does.
Like they eloped to get it legal, but then they had a church wedding as shown in -1. I'm going to take what's written here in issue 20 going forward in volume 1 as actual canon. -1 exists in a different Marvel universe.
The Kelvin timeline.
It's not the 616 to me.
Yeah.
So right in front of Elizabeth, Snowbird and Shaman are discussing the nature of the mantra and power of the talisman.
Is she like a messiah? And Shaman's like, don't use that word. She grew up in the white man world and doesn't know or thinks that that's something else. Like, it must mean Jesus.
Oh.
Nothing else can do. Like, it was just a weird moment of like very visible. It's not cultural appropriation, but like colonizing and like forced assimilation is the vibe that it's giving.
And at the same time, Heather is sort of reflecting like, wow, Elizabeth is this powerful being. I used to babysit her.
Yes. That was fun.
So Talisman tries to remove her coronet, but only experiences pain. And then Shaman is like, oh yeah, about that. So I told you to put it on, but like, it can't come off anymore.
That I was not well thought through. It sets him up
in a bad father.
It's a villainous turn for him.
Yeah.
Like he should have thought about it more. Like,
yeah,
you can save us with this, but also.
Yeah. In writing the whole book on Alpha Flight, I'm up to reading everything again so I can refresh myself. And I just got, I just read through Fabian Nicieza's run. And he does some good character work. And I mean, he's really good at writing people, no matter who they are. But he actually does some good work with Shaman, trying to redeem him, because Shaman is, Michael Tu Youngman is such a piece of shit for such a big chunk of this series.
He doesn't start out like that.
No, but like things like this where it's like, oh yeah, I told you to grab this out of the bag and put it on. And sort of forgot to tell you, you can never take it off. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's just, I had high hopes for the Shaman character at the beginning of it, but his character is slowly written like more of a shitty father throughout,
which is unfortunate because I appreciate the moments where Elizabeth is like, maybe he's not a shitty dad for having left us.
Yeah.
When it was more like she sort of threw him out.
So what do you think about Heather and Puck having a little one-on-one here?
I like it. It shows that Puck is being a good team member. He is being attuned to the feelings of others in a way that like toxic masculinity would never allow normally.
Yeah.
And he's taking on like the role of treasured friend, which is neat. Like, I like that relationship where it's more platonic. It's not creepy. So when Shaman comes in and it's like, starts off the conversation as if he's going to tell off Puck for being creepy and flirty with mm-hmm. Heather. And Puck is like, no, I know, like, and twice her age, it would be so inappropriate. Although at this point, she's 27 and Puck can't be 50.
We'll get into it. Okay. So
to finish that thought, yeah. He's like just being a good friend. And in the conversation with Shaman, he assumes that Shaman is thinking about that Puck is trying to mac on Heather.
Mm-hmm.
But it ends with Shaman being like, I think there will come a time when Heather's going to need you and call on you. And Puck was like, okay, sure. And then like, I won't be creepy and flirty, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Shaman's like, no, you need to be there for her. Like, give her as much strength and perseverance as you can. And all the moral support that you can muster, because somehow she's going to need it.
Yeah. And I think this whole sequence gets at Heather's post-traumatic stress. She saw her husband burst into flames and die, like
into dust motes. Like there wasn't anything to bury. It wasn't even like a pile of ash that could be swept up.
So,
so the fact that Puck is,
and she's thankful to Puck that he's just there to listen, that she can rely on him.
Right. And he's not making it creepy and she's not making it.
Yeah.
Like, so, I could see it being written by a man that she could have, like, oh, I'm so vulnerable. Like, I'm glad it's not that.
Yeah.
And that they have clear boundaries, and Puck had already gone in with the expectation of being a good friend. Like, mm-hmm. Shaman's thing about, yes, go to her and support her, doesn't feel like that big of an ask. Mm. Like, Puck is a good guy. He's going to do it anyway because he's a friend.
Yeah. The reason why Shaman and Puck have this talk is because Heather goes to the phone and she calls Walter to say, hey, we're heading to the West Coast. I don't want to be here when my parents get back.
Yeah.
So
how's that new base coming?
Yeah. So one thing about Shaman, though, he does encourage Puck to express his feelings. Like, don't try to bury your feelings for Heather. Like,
oh, strong feelings.
Yes, it's okay. But to let Heather make that first move. So
I don't like that aspect so much.
Well,
I know he says that, like, I'm aware of your feelings for Heather, strong feelings, but it doesn't have to automatically be romantic.
It is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why?
So I love that you had such an innocent view of that, because it gets real angsty.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So we jump forward a day later. Walter and Aurora take a boat to Tamarind Island, which his family owns. So, okay.
The Straits of Juan de Fuca, which is north of Seattle.
Yep.
So if you hear people talk about the San Juans, this is north of that.
Tamarind Island. It's owned by his family. So let's review Walter Lankowski. He played pro football.
Super buff.
He's a genius.
Yes. Because he has a doctorate in radiation that he got after his football career ended.
Yes. So, like, he is independently wealthy. He's super smart. He's hot. He turns into a hot furry monster. And his family owns an island.
And you're like, this is not fair.
Right? Why can't we have him instead of Elon Musk?
He would have had to leave with the previous administration.
That's true.
And he would not be as much of an oligarch.
So on Tamarind Island, they come upon this big Victorian mansion.
Yeah.
Once owned by his great aunt, who led an eccentric life and seemingly died almost a century prior. So this is what they want to use as their headquarters.
It's true. I feel like when I got the image of this house, I was like, Daryl loves this house. It has the tower.
It has a turret. I wanted to have a turret built onto my house, and I was told it would be too much money because every corner you add into an exterior construction like ups the price so much more.
Yeah. And but it's got like the little fancy things along the top of the roof.
Oh, the widow's lock.
No, just a fancy bit on the peak.
Yeah, that's the widow's lock.
But it's not a walkway.
You can't see that. That's okay. A 2D picture. It's a widow's lock.
Well, it's not going to matter soon.
True.
But there's a nice porch that wraps around.
Yeah. So the one sticking point to all this is the house is rumored to be haunted. Again, nothing driving me away from this.
No, especially the story of the aunt who married 8 times and all 8 husbands died under mysterious circumstances.
So they go into the house and everything looks real good. Like there are no dust claws on things. Everything's polished and dusted. And they split up and they're like, okay, let's explore this. Have they never seen Scooby-Doo?
Oh, also 9 husbands, not 8.
Okay.
But yeah, it's well kept up. Like there is not a speck of dust to be seen. And it's not like those really fun movies where there's like Rebecca with the giant sheets under a layer of dust that's helping preserve the furniture.
Yes. So as they split up, Walter ruminates on how Aurora is fighting to remain dominant when he suddenly falls through a hidden door, which is a Scooby-Doo ass move.
It's true. But he is noticing her language is changing and she sort of chalked up feeling cold, which she didn't used to experience. She chalked that up to the transformation of her powers.
Yep.
So there are things that are just off. Also, she's got like
nothing,
half a blanket and a very stringy
bikini.
So
at the same time he falls through, the lights go out and Aurora struggles to keep the Jean-Marie personality at bay before she emerges into the bright lights of a hallway lined with golden statues, which she discovers are alive.
It's another fun use of negative space in these panels. Mm. It's a lot of blackness, which works, and all you see are her text bubbles of how Aurora is a creature of the light and Jean-Marie is a creature of the darkness, and the Jean-Marie aspect gets stronger the longer she's in the dark, and she's desperate, so desperate to find any sort of glimmer of light.
So in this hallway, the statues look great, by the way.
Yeah, there's just
it's like
a wide variety of them.
Yes.
You've got like a Sherlock Holmes wannabe. You've got a Napoleon wannabe. You've got like a barrister with one of those stupid wigs.
Mm.
There's like an industrialist looking one. There's a lumberjack looking one.
Ooh, good for her.
And the lumberjack one is the one with an eyeball that looks very alive.
So the issue closes as Aurora is approached from behind by Lillian Van Loont, Walter's great aunt, who brings Aurora to see a newly golden Walter.
Though in times past, I was sometimes called Gilded Lily. Good points for Rick Parker for the lettering.
Mm.
Also this outfit of Gilded Lilies.
Yes. I believe I've said it before on the podcast. This and the next issue are probably my favorite issues of Elf of Light ever.
Because of her?
Yes. She's such a campy villainess. And this is really good. So it introduces her. This is why I had this issue in particular signed by Keith the first time I met him. The next one is probably my favorite, though, because we get into some backstory. So, yes.
Which, yes, I can see why you like so much. Knowing your penchant for things like the Hammer horror movies. I just want to talk about her look for a sec.
Okay.
So she's got a golden mask, a golden face. Unclear that it's a mask at first.
She has the flapper hairstyle.
Yes, it's very flat. She's got like the big thick curl that goes around under an eye. The very like cherub lip.
Mm-hmm.
That's
like
happening.
The Betty Boop lip.
Yeah, where it's like, I know your lips are longer than that, but you haven't painted all the way to the ends. And the sweeping swooshiness of her outfit, like it's ruched. And her head is sort of surrounded by a big round hood cowl. Mm-hmm. It's like a hood.
Yeah.
But like
the cowl behind her.
Yeah. And the way that it's just drawn, I don't think it could ever be reproduced in the real world.
Yeah.
But it's just
require like a lot of wire to keep that hood up.
Yes. And to do the ruching on the cloak.
Mm.
And you'd think, oh, she's so formless, but it's like a makes her look like a wraith or a wisp or something's just so set from the 20s. Yes. Which makes sense because she disappeared mysteriously in 1929.
Yes.
And it's just juxtaposed so starkly against Aurora with her little red sort of sweater thing and her purple bikini bottom.
Mm. And the shirt box I decorated for you has quite a few panels from this book.
Because you would grab any number 20 you could possibly find.
Yes.
Yes.
In the letters column, Michael Schultz of Moorhead, Minnesota writes in to profess his fandom for North Star.
Ooh.
C. David Carviello of Charleston, South Carolina, was very certain that upon Mac's death, Wolverine would be tapped to be the leader of Alpha Flight. To counter this, a letter from Jeff Mitchell of Rush City, Minnesota, was printed to show support for Heather as team leader.
Good for Heather.
Yeah.
Also good for the Minnesota representation.
Two Minnesota letters.
Is it because Minnesota is as close to Canada as you can get in the U.S.?
Probably. So issue 21 is entitled Love Wrought New Alchemy, dot, dot, dot. From April 1985, writer and artist, of course, are John Byrne, inks by Bob Wyachek. Coloring is Andy Yankus, letterer Rick Parker, editor Denny O'Neill. And I told you this a couple days ago. I actually got Andy Yankus's entire complete color guide for this issue.
Yes, you were so excited about
it. It's every single page with his coloring and his notations on the exact ink formula to use for every shade seen in this issue.
That's fun. Which is... like looking at it in the issue in real life, the different shades of gold that are needed for this splash page with Walter, like there's spots that are a little bit lighter, a little bit darker, so you can still get a little bit of sense of shading while preserving the metallic gold effect.
Yeah. Picking up right where the last issue left off, Aurora is stunned by the sight of Walter covered in gold, who Lily explains is preserved forever in a cocoon of gold.
It's true. And then she just opens the door for the origin story. Oh, Aurora does.
It's so good.
You so-called Gilded Lily, who are you? What are you doing here?
And legit, like 3/4 of this issue is the backstory of Gilded Lily.
It's true.
So let's roll it back to 1875.
Also, the flashback is in pastels. Yes. Like
it's CBS
such tone. The well-done effect of like... the old film type thing, like you'd scroll it back if it was a TV show and it would be in pastels.
She and her husband were in an automobile accident in the Transylvanian Alps. I do have a bit of a bone to pick because it's 1875 and they have like a jalopy.
Yeah, there's not much structure to that vehicle, which
I don't
when it hits that rock, it just falls apart, apparently.
Cars in 1875 like this.
I feel like
I don't think they had automobiles.
If they did, it would be one of these, like, barely moving things.
Yeah. So her husband was killed.
Instantly.
And her ass crawled around the woods for a while until she came upon a castle.
And she could feel an evil power crush, the weight of centuries crushing the stones. It's a fun description.
After collapsing on the threshold, she was nursed back to health by Esteban Diablo.
Just not even hiding. The last name.
So
the eyebrows, the handlebar mustache, like also what's great, you know how I said like she appears to be wearing a mask, like you can sort of tell that it's a mask.
Mm-hmm.
In all of these flashbacks you never see her face. She's collapsed face down on the brick. The canopy of the bed just happens to obscure her face. She's looking towards the window in the back of the room, so all you see is her hair. Like after the first after this page was like, oh, are they doing this? And I was so excited that they did it through the whole issue.
So she's nursed back to health. And as she gains strength, Diablo is like, I really want to show you my house and my laboratory. And by the way, I have this potion that can infinitely prolong life.
And I have had dabbles with women before, but you're the only one that I've ever loved and the only one I want to be a partner with. And like, he shows her the whole lab.
Mm-hmm.
But in these images, like, they're walking around the ground, so they're very small compared to the castle. She's holding her hands in front of her face because she's crying at dinner over the death of poor Lionel. Or there's like, yeah, a shadow from an arch, so you can see her bodice of the dress and the shape of her head, but you can't actually see her face.
So right around this time, he reveals that he's 1,000 years old, and then he transforms his clothes into a costume and said, just call me Diablo.
He walked so Hela could run with her ridiculous headpiece.
But he, as you said, he confesses his love. And they embark on both a personal and a professional relationship.
Yeah. Can't see her face because she's looking at Diablo. Can't see her face because she's kissing Diablo. She's got like a goggle mask thing going on.
So
womp womp. It's very Beauty and the Beast.
But the townsfolk, just like in Beauty and the Beast, catch on that something might be amiss at this place. And
it doesn't help that he's walking around in his costume in the village.
He really should have changed to get that loaf of bread. Because you know he's not baking it himself.
So Sinister would love this cape.
Mm.
And his shoes.
They're ballet flats?
They're not. They're like a Converse high top if you didn't have a tongue.
Oh.
Like, it's only got the side things and a flared top. So not a flared base.
Do we need to have like a couple's costume where you're Diablo and I'm Gilded Lily?
That sounds like a lot of work. I have so many cosplay plans, but no, I have to actually get the costumes made before we are officially in a trade war with China.
We also have to like get fabric for things before Joanne closes all of its stores everywhere. Like, I need to get that fabric for the Havoc jacket like next week.
Yeah. And I'm realizing that the cosplays I have and want to do are not X-Men or Marvel.
No.
So we have to go somewhere.
FlameCon.
Yeah.
Apparently FlameCon tickets are on sale right now.
Oh. But maybe once I have a PTO bank again.
Yeah.
Because there's Hunter from Midnight Suns, Space Ghost. I really want to do Captain Planet.
No.
And Derek, if you're listening, I think we should both do it.
Derek Nichols, we see you.
Because he posted the image and I'm like, I love him. And he's like, I love him. Except we need Mr. Scott Free will have to give a seminar on how to dye hair an unnatural color.
Yeah.
And also
an unnatural color. Right.
An unnatural color.
Okay. Yes.
Because he's done pink and Captain Planet needs green.
Yep.
But also the beard needs to be green.
I think that's something you can comb in.
Okay, good.
Like just for men, but mold.
Yeah.
So what, the townsfolk are pissed. They storm the castle and destroy the lab that seals Diablo within his ruins. Lily looking on.
They throw him into a pit, though. Like, it's not just a cask of Amontillado, like walled behind a wall. He's falling. That cape is fluttering behind him as he is thrown into a pit. Apparently not to be seen until Fantastic Four.
Yeah. So Lily's looking on and she's like, oh, this is some bad shit going down. And then the butler almost captures her, but she stabs him in the chest with the blunt end of a lit torch, which is so badass.
Well, a very pointy end of the lit torch.
I think it's still a little blunt for...
I mean, it's a stark angle to have to go into someone's chest. But the flame is obscuring her face.
After escaping into the countryside, she returned to the castle at a later time to free Diablo, but was unable to do so.
Because rock and steel are hard.
So Lily was a wealthy woman, having a fortune left to her by her first husband, and she put this money to work and built her own alchemical lab in England. So she goes to Queen Victoria's realm.
She has the goggles and the mask again. She's got a very broad hat with just a single feather sticking up out of it.
Fancy lady.
And she finds all the men who betrayed Diablo Like, so, they all started in this Transylvanian village, but then they all went around the world to do other things.
Yes, and she's putting what she learned from Diablo to use. So she discovered transmutation.
Yeah, she did.
Everyone in the Middle Ages is insanely jealous of that. And she's like, I know how I can use this.
Are we jealous of the hunk, bearded hunk that she has ensnared as the first husband?
Yep.
Like, ride it before you encase it.
So she married each of them in turn. Like, she made an honest woman out of herself every single time. She really put some work into this, like making them all fall in love. Like, she didn't just go and be like, you're gold now. She's like, no, you need to marry me, because she wants that cash.
She does. She explains that it was very easy to seduce them because she was so beautiful, but we never see her face. Mm-hmm. I love it so much.
So eventually she reaches the end of the story. We see that all these faces are the statues that Aurora has encountered in the hallway. And then Willie is like, thanks for listening. I'm dragging you into my lab because you're going to be my first female statue.
I've never had the opportunity of creating a female statue. We must choose a proper pose, a correct display for you.
So this really pisses Walter off, and he transforms into Sasquatch, which breaks the golden shell.
Almost. He is conked out during all this. He is unconscious. And Aurora is shouting, Walter, help me. If you can hear me, help me. And then he sort of comes to and is like, what happened to me? I was with Aurora. And like gives the recap of how they got into this house. And recaps how he was, whosamacallit, kidnapped. Fall through into the darkness.
Lily is about to transmutate Aurora. And Sasquatch bursts in and destroys Lily's lab.
She does use a potion to activate the rock to attack him, but he sort of brushes that off.
And by grabbing her cloak, he reveals what?
She's mostly robot.
A one-wheeled robot.
There's two. It's just...
Oh, really?
It's very narrow in the very 1920s way.
Okay.
Like, I love this look for her. I like the cloak best, but like, it's just so art deco, like the very long stem and then like whatever she uses for lungs and guts still with the hair.
But then he snatches her mask off.
He does. And she's all brainy underneath, like pink and wrinkled, and her eyes are bugging out. And it's just like, no, and she dissolves into dust,
and so does the entire interior of the mansion.
Yeah, like she's done something to the inside so that when she goes, it goes.
So everything crumbles, and then
he sneezes
that frees both himself and Aurora, but the outer structure of the house is still sound, leaving open the possibility of a new team base.
Yeah.
Aurora asks to go home, and Sasquatch reflects that she isn't quite Aurora or Jean-Marie, but possibly an emerging third personality.
Yeah. It's very strange.
And there is like a one-page interlude, too.
Yes. Snowbird is off and flying, and then she's struck by some sort of pain. She falls to the snow, and she's like, why am I afflicted so? I am a child of the gods. But that's all we got.
Yes, it's a little tease. In the letters column, many of the letters included in this issue support Heather and her leadership in the wake of Mac's death.
Oh, good.
Nigel Mason, whose address is withheld, has two short statements in his letter. First, he wants North Star to swallow his pride and come back to the team.
Oh.
North Star swallowing something. Second, he issues a warning to Talisman that she shouldn't turn her newfound powers on the team lest she get the, quote, beating of her life.
Oh, no. That's not great.
That's aggressive. Issue 22 is called Rub Out.
That's very suggestive.
May 1985, we have John Byrne, writer and artist, inks by Bob Wycheck again, coloring Andy Ankus, letterer Rick Parker, editors Denny O'Neill.
Also, speaking of at the gym, spoken by a straight guy who didn't know what he was saying, he's like, get your bottoms over here. Just like, oh, when are they arriving? or something like that. But it was like, if there were other gay people in this room, it would be fun.
Aurora, clad only in a bikini, shows up at North Star's door, shivering in the cold and asking for help. However, she is offended with when North Star addresses her as Aurora, and she stumbles back out into the snowstorm.
It takes him longer than one would think for him to shift gears. Because there's that first, the first step up, sure, yes, that makes sense. And then he's like, Jean-Marie, I was totally going to call you that from the get-go.
So he has to be real careful with his words.
Yeah, he has to get his friends Maurice and Rhonda.
His housemates.
Yes, well, one of them at least is.
So
there's three of them, there's only two bedrooms.
Like, she stalks away and
collapses
in the snow. He picks her up and then he asks why she's there, as he thought she was living with Walter. And she's so offended by the suggestion that she lives with a man. She's like, what? How can you say that?
I would never. And like, makes it as far as to throw the sheet off, but then just collapses into tears.
She's sort of self-aware enough to recognize that she's being harsh and North Star's only trying to help her. So then she goes into her story of how she came to be at North Star's door.
Because she woke up in a boat.
Yes.
She's on a boat.
So they're on their way back from Tamarind Island.
And she, Jean-Marie, only knows that she was out on the water. She doesn't know anything of what transpired before then. But there was a man who was nice enough to give her his jacket, but he wanted more.
He wanted to kiss her
on the neck, and there's a very shocked expression on her face.
So then she spent 3 days flying towards North Star.
He kept trying to tell me to be calm, asking me what was the matter. He was so insufferably polite, but he kept calling me Aurora, and she had a headache. But then when she opened her eyes again, she was just floating. Like, somehow she went from the boat up to flight, and then that's when she drifted across the continent.
So North Star does question this, and he says, wait a minute, I thought like Aurora flew and not you. And she said, this is the first time, or it's the second time that Jean-Marie has flown the first being when my powers manifested.
When she was 14.
Yes.
Aurora... It is Aurora who keeps her from flying. She keeps that power to herself, which is a very interesting dynamic.
So after this, Rhonda puts Aurora to bed, or Jean-Marie to bed. And North Star is like, should I call Walter? Nah.
He picks up the phone and he's like, no, I'm going to let him stew on it.
And this is a real chance for my sister and I to reconcile so we can be a duo again.
He's so self, like... I generally don't mind him being a dick when it's not really affecting a whole lot, but this is more malicious. I don't like this look for him, but I do like when he's petty. I will say that. Also, there's a hunky ad in here.
For lifting or some fitnessing.
With such short shorts, like those are tank shorts.
In Vancouver, Heather and Talisman are walking on the sidewalk in the rain and talk about the missing Aurora and how worried Walter is.
And how many similarities that exist between Walter and the Hulk and Bruce Banner.
But then suddenly Heather thinks she sees Mac in the crowd and chases after the man, but trips and falls as the man runs away. In a sequence that may be the most heartbreaking one in Alpha Flight so far.
I mean, after he dies in front of her. But yes, because...
I think the emotions at play tip the scales for me.
There's the bun buns.
In case you didn't hear.
Nora was running away from Nick because Nick is being a dick. Come by us, Nora, but don't eat the cord. And the art is really interesting because it's raining. There's an umbrella and like the colors are very muted, except for Heather and Elizabeth as they're walking. And everyone else in the background is blues and purples. But when she sees Mac, there's a few people in color and he's right behind the couple that's in brighter colors.
So really doing a good job of drawing attention to where you should be looking.
Yes, and he's got the iconic red checkered shirt. And then in the next panel, it's like very close to him, all wet and damp, moist, if you will. And Heather's in the back in full color saying, Mac. And like, it's just so well done of like, it adds to the urgency of it and mm-hmm. the desperation of it, and also how much city things are happening in the background, but the background is just muted.
Mm.
And she trips and falls.
It's pathetic. Like, it's sad.
Yeah. Like, she and Elizabeth are in grays mm-hmm. in for that panel, as like, you can't tell, like, is she crying super hard? Is it the rain in her face? Is it both? And it's probably both.
Yes.
Like
she was just doing so well. And
she was.
And this is really just playing on that trauma that she's gone through.
And the only thing that would have made it worse is if her glasses were cockeyed.
Oh. Like, are they cracked at all?
No, they're okay. Just wet. And she's like wet and soggy on the ground, which on the previous page, like, there was almost like a point that she and Elizabeth were nice and dry under the umbrella and everyone else around her was soaking wet.
We go back to Quebec, where Northstar brings Aurora to a circus where he used to work.
Yeah. She has tried to smooth her hair down to the most Jean-Marie.
Mm. Like, really, she's going for the school marm.
She's doing what she can with what she's got. Northstar even makes the comment that Aurora at least would share the hair with Jean-Marie. Like, they could both do what they wanted with it. But now, like, with that haircut, Aurora just sort of was sticking it to Jean-Marie and being really rude.
Mm. So the owner, Clementine, emerges from her trailer and plants a big kiss on Northstar as a greeting and invites both he and his sister in.
And she's like, uh-oh. Mm.
The reason for the visit is a letter Clementine had sent Northstar, which alluded to some difficulty she is having with Pink Pearl, a performer she hired from a European circus. After Pearl's arrival, her regular performers kept having accidents, and Pearl replaced them with her own friends.
I couldn't figure out, like, how sinister were these accidents. Was it just like, oh no, I've sprained my ankle, or is it like I fell to my death from 100 feet up in the air? It is unclear. I do appreciate that while Clementine is going through some of this exposition, Jean-Marie is in the back trying on the clown nose. And there's a knock at the door, but it's French, so it's knock knock. And Clementine answers and gets punched in the face by Pink Pearl.
So just to be clear, we have to go with circus tropes. Pink Pearl is the fat lady of the circus.
Very large, like blob.
Yeah. Like, that's the trope they're going for. That's the position that she filled in Clementine's circus.
Yeah. It's not a great representation.
No. So Northstar moves to defend Clementine. Pearl is like, keep your mouth shut, Clementine.
Like, she's giving it all away.
Yes.
She's not very good at withholding information that the heroes could use. And so Northstar goes over. And she, Pink Pearl thinks he's hot. Like, keep your nose out of this, pretty boy. And he's like, no. And she's like, well, I don't want to see your face messed up, but Skeleton Man, take care of him. And because of the small confines of the trailer, Northstar says he can't use his speed. Like, that's his excuse. Yes. As he's like being choked out by this very thin skeletal man in a white suit with a cowl. It fits the description of Skeleton Man.
It's giving me Ragdoll from Secret Six that I just read a whole omnibus of.
Oh, I have not yet, so I don't know, get the reference.
So Aurora Light is
Jean-Marie.
Sorry. In my write-ups, I keep the name consistent for a lot of characters because otherwise it's hell on earth.
Interesting. I thought that because they're distinct personalities and distinct, their characters are different enough that you would want to make that distinction.
Well, maybe we'll see in the editing process.
Yes.
Anyway.
She's like, get away from my brother. And she is forced to motorboat Pink Pearl.
She is actually like choked out with those tits.
It's not comfortable.
Then Jean-Marie wakes up with the Aurora personality dominant and has no idea where she is.
No.
But then we get a villain monologue.
Yeah, we do.
Pearl is like, oh, well,
You do speak English.
I'm really trying to do some evil here. The Prime Minister and the President of the United States are meeting 5 miles away, and there's a bomb inside a tent here that's going to blow everything within like a 5 mile radius up.
It's a nuclear bomb. Like, yes. There's a mushroom cloud and everything.
So she's like, you know what? I'm going to get away with it. Like, me and my crew, we're going to roll out. We're going to get away with it because the bomb will be traced to the circus. And Clementine was part of the
super violent terrorist separatist cell.
Yes.
And North Star is like, the very same cell I was a part of.
The FLQ. So, Aurora, having enough of this, uses her flying power to get up in the air, and she starts blowing. North Star remarks he's never seen her do that before joining the battle himself.
Right. And she, and we've been watching some of the old Batmans after Svengoolie on Saturday nights, and hello, Nick. He up periscoped. And Batgirl has been in a few episodes, and she has one move.
It's a kick.
And it is climbing up some stairs or a ladder and then kicking. And that's what Aurora is doing in this panel.
So Bones, which I think is the skeleton man.
Yeah, and then there's some...
He is about to throw a knife at Aurora, who is being used as a human shield.
Yeah. It should be noted that Aurora is kicking the bearded lady. Very leonine is this character. And then there's some dude who's going after North Star. He's like, come here, little man. Not the first time North Star has heard that. And then that's when Pink Pearl's, again, very like Batman villain. Stop them, you useless fools. There's only two of them. And so she had gone after Aurora and was like holding her up for Bones to throw the knife.
But then he's tackled and his throw goes off, instead sinking into Pearl's chest.
It's true, but it's okay because she's so fat.
Yep.
The knife doesn't kill her. It's just the shock that knocks her out.
As the police haul Pearl and her crew away, Clementine thanks the twins and says she and North Star's terrorist past will remain hidden. Aurora, learning about this, is horrified and says she will inform the team of his past.
Yeah. I thought it was Clementine saying, and the secrets of my past shall remain secret, but maybe that's North Star saying it out loud.
No, it's Clementine saying that their shared secret of their past will remain hidden.
It says the secrets of my past.
Oh, it's both of their pasts.
Well, we know that, but it's just weird that they let it slip in such a way. And North Star is like, it's okay, I just want to get together with my sister again. And Aurora's like, it's hollow gold indeed, dear brother. Yes, it is me, Aurora, not the weak-willed fool flying to her brother for help. I've learned much about you today, Jean-Paul, perhaps too much. Much I must try now to come to terms with. Much I never shall. And it's, again, so coded. Like,
It's there.
It's there. It's like she knows that he's gay and is using it to blackmail him, which was definitely used on me at one point.
50 miles outside of Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Roger Box and Madison Jeffries test out the new box suit, which has now gained the ability to fly.
Yeah, Madison Jeffries is like, was flying a mistake? He might never come back again.
After landing, Roger reports it works perfectly. Madison warns Roger to not stay in the armor too long, as using the suit is a symbiotic relationship. After loading the suit in a van, they leave as Roger reiterates his plan to get revenge for Mac's death.
Yeah. Roger seems like a great guy. And it should be said, like, these two pages are sort of plopped in the middle of the big Pink Pearl battle.
Just like the Snowbird.
Yeah.
Tease. In our letters column, Dave Gomshay of East Hills, New York, writes in about the discrepancy between what happened in the Alpha Flight title and what was promoted in Marvel Age, issue 21. In this issue, a new member of the team was teased for issue 19, named Spellbinder. However, the character that debuted was named Talisman. Editorial sort of brushes this away and says that, of course, everyone knows by now the new member is Talisman. However, this reveals that naming Elizabeth Talisman rather than Spellbinder must have been a late change before the story was finalized. On a related note, people wrote in expressing their satisfaction with seeing more of a spotlight on Shaman in recent issues.
Oh, good.
The Spellbinder would later become like a limited series.
Is it her?
No.
Oh.
It's a blonde woman.
Oh.
It's a blonde white lady that looks like Barbie.
Oh.
It's in the miniseries box for us to eventually cover. The other bulk of the letters in the issue are about Eugene Judd's superhero name, and all of the letters are adamant he was definitely not named after hockey equipment.
Right. He's named after the Shakespeare character.
That's a lie.
What?
John Byrne straight up said he named him after a hockey puck.
That's so dumb. No.
Yes. Yeah.
No.
Yep. Like, John Byrne is on record saying he named Puck Puck after a hockey puck.
But the reference is right there. Right there. How can you do that to Eugene? To Judd? To Puck?
I know.
Fun fact, in the game Solar Quest from 1985, which is like Monopoly, but better, you don't want to murder people.
This is not the first time we've talked about that board game in our five seasons.
No, but because it was 1985, one of Uranus's moons is the property card is U1 1985, and that moon went on to become Puck.
Oh.
Because all of Uranus's moons are named after Shakespeare characters.
Mm. So our next episode, there's going to be another team death in our next Alpha Flight episode.
Ugh. How much more can we take?
I don't know. So what did you think of these three issues?
I like them. I see why you like Gilded Lily so much.
Mm.
I love the art deco of her.
Yeah.
Like the courthouse where we got married, because we're married now.
She's a great little supervillain. They devoted so much page time to her backstory, and she crumbled away.
To dust.
It's sad.
And you won't tell me she comes back again, so I'm hoping she does.
So, it's comics. You never know.
I want Diablo, once he's free of whatever happened with the Fantastic Four, because he's probably still alive after that.
He is, I believe.
He needs to resurrect her.
Mm.
In her...
The greatest love story of all time.
Yes, in her Gilded Lily form.
Mm.
That outfit was so good.
Yeah.
So...
Anything else about these issues?
No.
Okay. Well, our next episode is going to be Starfleet Academy.
Oh, there is something.
Yeah.
When Aurora kissed the construction worker, all I could think in my head was Demanda saying, "A girl's gotta eat."
No, it's true. She should be on that shirt too. Or he should be on that shirt. Random construction. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed some more Alpha Flight coverage, and we will be here next time.
Be well.
Bye.